helps if I push the little red button.
Welcome to part two of the Webcomic Beacon 24-hour broadcast attempt for 24-hour Comics Day. We had been playing some music in the last episode. The first part of this show. God damn it! Why can't I get anything straight? And this part, we have Mark Savory and also Melissa of Tin Lizard Productions with us as they go on for a long time talking about this, that, and the other thing. But as I mentioned, we did have some music submitted from webcomicers before. And first off, we did have music by Rose of RedMoonRising.com. Some wonderful, almost ambient, relaxing, tranquil stuff you could fall asleep peacefully to. It's all very, very nice. Hopefully I didn't really set anyone asleep while they're trying to work on their 24-hour comic still. But anyway, and after that, we also had music by Mike of OnyxSparrow.com, who does the webcomic Prepare to Die, as well as the Wagon webcomic battle trading card game, of which there is a Webcomic Beacon podcast card in development right now. And of course, you can also catch PSI and Ardra characters and plot device cards on the third and fourth deck, I believe. There is a fifth deck out as well, so you can check that out. And Wagon webcomic battle should be at PenguinCon next year, 2010. I forget which month, but it's a ways off. And the Webcomic Beacon will also be there as well, hopefully, with that new promotional card out, the Webcomic Beacon podcast card. Should be good times. Right now, I do want to say I didn't play as much of Mike's music as I thought. I didn't pay attention to that. Most of the songs were like way over 4 minutes long. And let's see here. Right now, I got to... What did I do? I thought I could make a 24-hour podcast. That's what I thought I could do. Let's see here. What we're going to be... Shit. God damn it. Please stand by. We'll be right back. All right, that piece was done by the same guy that has done all the music for the webcomic Beacon thus far. Only difference is I did not mess with this one. I did cut it off a little bit. It went to like a second part or overture or something like that. But for the most part, it's all there. It was just two minutes more. But okay, cool. Now let's let's go to the phones.
Hello.
Hey, Mark. How's it going?
Oh, it's going all right. Let me plug in this jack here.
I figured it'd better be about time that I actually, you know, try to get you on the show.
Yeah, it's about damn time. What's up with that?
Well, I still have company over. That's the thing. And just everything is going all crazy and such.
Oh, I don't have any chili.
You know, me trying to figure out crap to talk about.
How's it been going so far?
So far, it's been going, well, okay. I've been mostly getting away with just playing music, a little bit of sketches, and then doing reruns or whatever.
I've been at work, so that's why I've not been here. If anyone has any doubts of my dedication to our podcast and webcomicry and stuff like that there. Oh, Fess, you just got a lot better looking. Oh, no, wait a minute. Oh.
Yeah, that's my friend Melissa.
Okay.
Say hello.
Hello.
The lizard queen. Hello.
Who are we talking to?
This is Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
Oh, hi, that's Mark.
Howdy. I am not making a 24-hour comic, but I just put together another quick thing. I'm not actually making a real update tomorrow because I figured I would be here doing podcasty stuff, so I made some fillery stuff instead, and that was my great and wonderful contribution. Sacrifice that my readers will have to make, all 30 of them will have to make.
Well, that's because you're not advertising well enough.
I advertise
well enough. Well enough.
Well, that could be.
Have you been watching anybody's live feeds today?
No, I have not had a chance because at work they won't let you stream live audio.
I suppose. And what's Saturday? You work Saturday?
Yeah. Business need. They don't respect the webcomicry. But so I haven't really had a chance to check any feeds yet. Except that fursuit TV thing, which less said the better.
Yeah, that's when we crashed, like, what, the 10th freaking millionth time.
Yeah, I just turned on there, and I said, well, what's this? And actually, there was some funny stuff on it. But they had a guy on there. They had something that looked like it should be on a stage, but it was out in the park.
Okay.
Because on a stage, it might make sense. You know how in theater, when you have a black set, barely any lights or anything, and you have people in black clothing and ski masks and stuff, and they run puppets and stuff.
Okay, yeah.
You know? Well, that's kind of what they were doing, but they were doing it out in broad daylight. And they had this, that's why it looked kind of dumb, because they had this really pretty good-looking sort of realistic-y looking wolf puppet. It was life size, and they're maybe bigger than life size. And there were like three guys operating it. Like there's a guy who is like running the head. Of course, you can see him doing all this. And there's another guy on the other side who's like running the front paws. And then there's the third guy, and he's the sad one because he was running the back paws. And so every time that the dog would sort of stand up on its hind legs or whatever, he had his face right under the tail of the wolf thing. And he got the crappy end of the deal. I'm just saying. But yeah, now on a stage, if they had done it properly in a theater or something, it would be fantastic because it's that kind of puppetry.
Right.
But out in broad daylight, it looked kind of dumb, especially for guy number three. Felt sorry for him.
Are you sure he wasn't guy number two?
No, he was the third guy.
Oh, okay.
Because he was on the end.
Right.
That was an awful joke.
It was, but it's, you know, what can I say?
It's me.
I'm more awake than some people, I think.
Let's see here. It's like 11 p.m. Eastern, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Mark, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you Central?
No, I'm Eastern.
You're Eastern, okay. So that's pretty late for you. You're probably not going to be on much longer.
Really, too.
Right?
What's that?
You're probably not going to be online for much longer, huh?
Well, I probably will be, because it's like my Friday, so I don't have to go into work tomorrow.
Well, I'll be here actually for another 12 hours.
You're gonna power through.
Well, I've already said I would, so I'm going to. And there seems to be some interest. If there was zero interest, I probably would have stopped. But there are people in the chat room. So and there's 23 guests apparently. In addition to the four people with actual names.
Oh, I didn't see any of them.
Yeah, and the one that brought me chili is here too.
Yeah, you totally scored. You got chili, dude. I've got a glass of wine here. But other than that, I don't have any chili.
Oh, hey, did you hear JT on earlier?
No.
Yeah, he played a very short rendition of Freebird. And also he did a cover of Skull Crusher Mountain.
How does one do a very short version of Freebird?
I could go try to find it, but...
No, that's probably not...
That would take a while.
Freebird's like the original Rickroll. I
mean, yeah, that's true.
Is.
But on the other hand, it's sort of kind of the same music played over and over and over in a big long string.
Yeah, the only best part is at the end, and I think it was about the end part that he was playing, so... So the best part!
They had a high school dance on 24-hour comic day? Is that what they had? Because you usually get that at the high school dance. They play Freebird.
When did you go to high school?
Well, hey, you know, it was a while ago. But I seem to recall, because I wouldn't go to the dances, but I seem to recall that seemed to be like, in all the movies, everything, oh, not Freebird.
Oh, well. No, I'm still recording a bunch of the show, and I'm going to be splicing it all together. So people will be able to hear JT Shea sing the abridged Freebird on ukulele.
That is awesome. So how many sketch requests did you get so far?
Four, actually. I've got one to do a quote-unquote pirate leprechaun, which...
I saw that. You did that.
Which, actually, I'm pretty happy with. It looks pretty cool. I have no idea whether or not it's... Because it goes to this guy whose screen name is Pirate Leprechaun. So...
You should have made it a leper.
No.
Because that's how you kind of spelt it, I thought, when I checked the twit pic.
No. And then I also had a commission to do Connie, which is like the robot mascot of the Convergence, which is in Minnesota. When is it usually?
It is 4th of July weekend every year in Minnesota. Year number 12 is coming up in 2010.
I saw that. That was a sexy robot.
It is a sexy robot.
Sexier than my robot. My robot is kind of clunky by comparison.
Yeah, I did
a clunk bot.
Well, Connie's kind of into clunky robots.
She has
a crush on Gort from the day the Earth stood still.
Well, you can't really blame her. He had such penetrating vision.
And, you know, I think she's just into tall guys.
Hey, Robot 4 is kind of tall.
True.
I'll have to draw another cross fan art.
He's taller than Mark or Dennis. I think Sherm is kind of... He's a bit taller than Sherm, maybe.
Well,
but then Sherm
you can't
has
count
the hat.
Sherm's hat.
Yeah, he's got the hat.
That's not part of his height. as much as Sherm would want it to.
It's all the illusion, you know. But, yeah, we're going to have to see Sherm here pretty soon. Sherm has been off working on his robot. And we haven't seen him for quite a while, so I'm trying to build up the suspense to see Sherm's robot.
Maybe it's built out of Tinker Toy, like, you know, all kids did when they were kids. Well, yeah, when they were kids. Making their own toy robot is like out of Tinker Toys and Kinect.
I don't know. I just picture something boxy and clunky with a lot of rivets. I don't know. I sketched Sherm's robot. That was just to get the ideas down that I wanted on it.
He glues on googly eyes.
Well, no, because that would be too friendly.
Okay.
Yeah, so I kind of have an idea what the Grouch, what the Grouch's robot's going to look like, but it's just this thing's going to last a while. I'm afraid this will probably be like the trip to the moon story. It's probably going to take till Christmas to finish, so it's going to be a little while, especially if I do filler like I'm kind of doing tomorrow.
I look at the chat. JT Shea is actually in our chat room right now, saying that he loves Freebird. Yeah, I look at the chat every once in a while.
So, have you covered any fantastic topics of webcomicry yet?
No, I haven't covered any topics per se, as in no. But no, I haven't.
You haven't. Well, maybe we should. And stuff.
What, like right now?
Like talk about something real?
Talk about something real? Well, I'll tell you a story. It's not webcomic related.
Well, I could try to get Tanya on.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering. But you'll appreciate this, Almighty Lizard Queen.
Yes.
I was sitting next to this guy at work.
Hold on, I can't hear you.
Speak up.
What's that? Oh, you're talking to Tanya. He's an older guy, and he's kind of into some of the same sci-fi I am. And today he looks like Wilford Brimley, so he kind of talks kind of like Wilford Brimley, too.
Awesome.
And he was looking at some stuff. And he's like, you know, I've wanted this for a long time, and it's only $50. And I look over there, and what is it? It's the Space 1999 Mega Set.
Wow!
And so I spent, awesome. Like, the next 2 hours trying to talk him into buying it.
Wow!
Because he was torn between that, and this is, like, the discontinued version of it, like the big box, not the slimline box, but the big box. He was torn between that or The Civil War by Ken Burns. And it was a tough sell, I got to tell you, because I could totally go with the Ken Burns myself, but, you know, I would just tell him every so often, Eagle's going to blow up, be big and sparkly. Big sparkly explosions, just saying. He's like, yeah, I know. Ken Burns, though, Civil War, I don't know, man. And I'd be all like, remember the time they were on the planet and turned into cavemen? And then there was the time when that blue energy ball took over that crewman, and all of a sudden he would like grab people and freeze to death because they'd suck all the energy out of them and they'd die. Wasn't that awesome?
Well, yeah, that one was pretty cool. I remember that.
What about the time with the Metaprobe, and they had the giant dragon creature with the octopus arms that would grab a crewman and like suck it in underneath and then spit out a burning skeleton? Oh, you remember that? Wasn't it cool?
He's like, yeah, that was scary, man. I remember that was, oh, wow, yeah.
So I think he did break down and buy it, ultimately.
As well he should.
As well he should.
Yeah.
Because it's Space 1990 freaking 9.
Yeah.
And you should totally buy that.
Back when 1999 was the far future. Seemingly, yeah. Sort of.
The first season.
Yeah, yeah.
That was before they regressed into the disco era in the second season of Space 1990.
But, you know, it was better than Galactica 1980.
Well, there's a lot of things that were better than that. which, by the way, you can get on DVD, which is shocking but true.
I am torn between getting that and saving my dignity.
I own The Star Lost.
Oh, my.
I do. And, you know, it's not really as bad as it could have been. Some good stuff in there.
There are a lot of things that aren't as bad as it could have been, because I can imagine some pretty bad things. I've seen
the last election was not as bad as it could have been.
A lot of things are better than cholera. that's.
What was the other one? Logan's Run.
Logan's Run is awesome.
The TV show. I remember watching that. That's not on DVD. I do recall. I hadn't bought any, but you can get the downloads on Amazon.
Yes.
And I suspect that will find its way to DVD when the new Logan's Run movie comes out next year.
Yes.
Do you think they'll have the nudity scene in the new movie? Probably not.
I don't know anything about it. I just know it's supposed to come out next summer or something. Yeah. I actually had, I didn't have, but I actually got to see one of the original life clocks from the real Logan's Run. And that was pretty sweet. It was... It was about the size of a 50-cent piece,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually an octagon shape.
Yep.
If I remember right, or it's sort of—it's not a perfect circle. It's like the edges are off of it, and it's sort of—it was in a plastic case about the size of a diskette,
mm-hmm.
and it was. So I'm not sure how thick it was. I suspect it was like a sticker, and it looked like it had been etched with a laser, so it was a hologram.
Yeah.
Which is why it had that weird twinkly thing when they'd hold it up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool to get that close to history, and you can actually pick up the little diskette. Oh, it's a life clock. Carousel.
Did you get to touch it? Did you get to hold it?
Well, I picked up the diskette case.
It was in a box.
Yeah, oh. Because it's obviously.
Mark, you went quiet.
Hmm?
You went quiet.
I'm still here. Are you still there?
Yep. Yeah, I have to use the external speakers so she can hear as well. So when you get quiet, because I don't have it up so loud so it doesn't come on the microphone.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah.
I thought you just turned me off because you're sick of hearing me.
Yeah, shut up.
Well, you just kind of fade out there every once in a while.
I do.
Yeah.
Move this microphone over here. There we go.
Anyway, your story about the Logan's Run crystal... reminds me of a few years ago, what is it, 2005, that the Peter Jackson King Kong came out?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was in Austin, Texas at a film festival called the Butnumathon for Ain't It Cool News. And I was, I think, no, it wasn't when King Kong came out. It was when Return of the King was due in a couple weeks. And
mm-hmm.
Peter Jackson was at the film festival, sitting behind me by a couple rows, and he had brought a birthday present for Harry, who, Harry Knowles running the film festival. And the present was one of the gas bombs from the 1933 King Kong.
Whoa!
And I got to hold it. I was holding the bomb that killed King Kong in my hands. And talking to Paul Dini of comics fame, and we're just, it was the presence of a holy object. It was really quite astounding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly how it is. I got within 2 feet. I did not get to pick it up because it did not belong to me. I got within 2 feet of Paul Morrow's comic. I got to hold at least one of the copies of the Necronomicon, and I got to leaf through the pages.
Awesome.
K&B Effects had come to our college to give a little demo. They had the head of Al Pacino there from some movie he was in at the time, where they blow up a car with Al Pacino in it.
Yeah.
And this was one of the stunt heads that they had, Al Pacino. And they had the ear from Reservoir Dogs with them and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
But they actually had at least one of the copies of Necronomicon. I don't know how many they made, but it's one of the ones that.
Yeah.
And things like that are so freaking awesome.
Yeah, they are.
I probably the best experience I ever had with getting near stuff was the Doctor Who traveling exhibit. It was in a big semi-trailer, and they were kind of hosted by public television, and they would go around to these different places, and they came to our city, and I volunteered to be one of the ticket takers or whatever.
Was this pre-new new series?
Oh, yeah, this is old school Doctor Who.
Okay.
This is
'80s. Because they have a new traveling show in Britain with the new series stuff.
Ah. No, this was the old... this was '86.
Okay.
This was... They had some of the creatures I'd never seen before because I hadn't had access to see all the Doctor Whos, so there were some creatures in there I didn't know at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they had your usual... they had the Daleks. They had a K-9. They had a copy of John Pertwee's car, one of the cars, Bessie.
Yes.
And probably the coolest thing I got to do, I got to put on one of the actual cyber suits.
Oh, cool.
Be a Cyberman. I got to go around and terrorize little kids and be a Cyberman.
Oh!
So that was my total, like, geek cherry-popping action, be an actual Cyberman.
That is awesome.
Flowers. Yeah, it was really cool. The Doctor Who traveling is it was fucking awesome for what it was. I mean, it's kind of small, I guess, but
yeah. But
I thought it was awesome because
cool
I lived way out in the sticks, so we didn't actually get to go do stuff like you guys, where you get to go do real stuff. I mean, Fess, I know he goes down every day and he goes to that corner where Mary Tyler Moore threw her hat in the air and stands by the statue.
No, he doesn't.
I've been there like twice, only by accident.
By accident,
he's frightened of the city.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on RampageNetwork.com. Be sure to check out our weekly live broadcast on TalkShoe.com. Listen in, chat, or call in at WebcomicBeacon.com/live.
He goes out there with a hat. I know he does. He throws it in the air.
No, the person who goes out there every day and does that, that's me.
No. I'd be doing the Rota, though. I would, like, totally fail. I would have fail at...
Why is it snowing on us, Fess?
I'm playing with the effects on the camera. It snows.
Yeah, so I wish I lived someplace
like
where I could do more cool like that, where you could go to some of these conventions and meet some of these people, meet the bad astronomer. That would be awesome.
the bad astronomer call me up on the phone and stuff. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
That is cool. That is really awesome. But I don't. I live like nowhere, so I still live in a nowhere. Even when I lived in Seattle, there wasn't anything going on that I knew of at the time that I could go do, except for their film festival. But then I worked nights, so I was like tired all the time and never went anywhere, did anything. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a waste. Kind of a waste for me.
Well, I had a thought there, and it just totally left my brain. I'm sorry. But, a lot of the stuff I do, it's because I go out and find it. You know, it's not necessarily in this town. You know, the Butnumathon's in Austin, Texas, and the reason I know Phil Plait, the bad astronomer, is because I went to the Galapagos with him. You know, I know P.Z. Myers. Well, P.Z. Myers isn't even local. I mean, he's in Minnesota, but he's, you know, out in the sticks on one of the rural campuses of the University of Minnesota.
Mm.
But,
yeah. I'm afraid I'm in a LaGrange point of culture where there's nothing. Like, there's culture over there, and
you're
there's culture
Bermuda
over there, and I'm kind of stuck in the middle.
It just kind of crashes and burns around you?
Well, it doesn't even do that. It's all ashes. There's no...
Okay.
Can't even crash and burn, so it's pretty bad. Their idea of culture around here is, like, their local football team, which I couldn't care less about.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it was baseball, I could probably get into it, but it's football. So I'm like, meh. But anyway, yeah, so... That's pretty cool. PenguinCon is like the I went to the breakaway convention for Space 1999 in 1999. a lot of the actors were there. Martin Landau wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
He was off. They said he was off filming that bit for Sleepy Hollow because he's in the carriage there. He's one of the people that gets killed, and not to give anything away. So he was off doing that. So he wasn't there. But the rest of them were. And Barbara Bain was there, but she didn't really say anything. Mm-hmm. She met with like a few of her fans, and that was it. And she was there to do a reading with Barry Morse, who's sadly no longer with us. Got to meet him, and he was awesome. Barry Morse was really awesome. He had this whole riff that he would go into about how science fiction has been around forever, and he was saying Shakespeare, The Tempest, you know, that's science fiction, in his Barry Morse voice, which I can't do. So that was pretty cool.
You've just faded out again.
Oh, that's Fess. Fess is there with his robotic eye. So I suppose we should talk about webcomics. Hey, look, we gained a viewer.
What's to talk about webcomics? I'm sorry, there's a little bit...
That's incredibly disturbing.
There's a little bit of delay, so he'll see it in like 10 seconds.
Okay.
I saw her glasses, and I saw your robot eye.
Oh, wait, there's more coming.
You opened your eyes a bit. I can see that. I didn't know you had green eyes. They look just right, though. They totally look just perfectly right. Ain't tech marvelous? Some tech.
I love technology.
Yay.
Things we can do with tech.
You know, the special theory of relativity is being used just so we can put googly eyes on Fess. This is amazing. I love science.
Facial recognition software.
Yeah.
Maybe it's self-defense for the camera when Fess stares into it and, you know, wants to put something over it.
Somehow I think we lost the thread of the conversation here.
For those of that don't know what's going on, we're on Ustream right now, and I got this program called Manicam, and it has face recognition technology, and I put googly eyes and a cat.
Jesus Christ. You're actually a furry. Oh my God. You're a furry for real. For a minute there, I thought I had accidentally switched over to that furry TV channel.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a delay for everybody else. My face hurts from smiling.
Furry TV channel?
There's a furry TV live stream going on right now.
Oh.
It's been going on for a couple hours, and there's all dudes in fursuits dancing and stuff. And that's where those puppet dudes were I was watching. They were... there's one of the, it looks like MTV, only it's all fursuit people. I didn't see Downtown Julie Brown, but there's something going on there.
Oh, that's a new look for you.
Solid.
I
actually more like Mike Brady. I'm just...
Oh, God.
You actually look more like one of the Bradys there. I don't know if it's Greg or Mike.
Oh,
the cop hat, the cop hat.
Is that the Easy Rider? The blonde? Is that the Easy Rider? Married with children. Okay. It's putting all these things on Fess, which is pretty cool software.
Yeah, I know. It's avoiding me entirely. It's... I'd make a rude comment, but I think I'll avoid it.
Right.
Village people. Village people.
Oh, jeez.
YMCA.
I was never very good at that.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
You little
devil. So were we about to talk about something?
Let me try to get Tanya.
That's what we were doing. Is that it?
That's right.
I have to call her phone, so this is awfully late. Well,
is she in Central Time or?
I don't remember.
That makes a kind of a big difference.
You've reached the phone of Tanya Higgins. I just want to be happy. Please think about that before you leave your message. Thanks.
That's awesome.
At the tone, please record your message. When you are
Fess is calling you late at night.
You may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Awesome.
Hey, Tanya. It's Fess. Your old buddy.
Me.
Yeah, it's a bit late. Sorry I didn't call you earlier. So you're probably asleep now, and I tried to wake you up. But anyway, this has been Fess of the Webcomic Beacon doing the 24-hour broadcast with reruns. And, well, sorry we missed you, Tanya. No show next week, because I'm pretty sure I'm still going to be editing this show by that time. So... We should have a show on the 18th of October, and we will have Jenny of the Zombie Hump... The Zombie... Damn it!
Zombie
Jenny
Humper,
of
what?
The Zombie Hunters webcomic, which is an awesome zombie comic, and really great art and everything. So be sure to come back on the 18th. I believe it's the 18th.
Wow.
Yes, the 18th. And, all right, I'll hang up now. See you, Tanya.
Bye.
Okay, so if I go get my cell phone and call the Webcomics Beacon while I'm standing here, will I open up a rift in space-time?
No, there'll just be two of you.
You gotta watch out for the Blinovich limitation effect. Just saying.
Are we calling ourselves now? Fess has his cell phone out.
Fess, tampering with space and time.
I think only one person can be on by the phone at a time, though.
Oh, curses.
Hello?
Curse it all.
Hi.
Hi.
What's going on?
What's going on?
Hey, this is cool. Woo. Okay. We have somebody that's wanting to call in to the show, so I'm going to go ahead and
we have callers.
We have a caller.
A caller.
Hello, you're on the Webcomic Beacon. Hello? You are on the Webcomic Beacon, if you can speak up.
I don't hear anything.
I don't hear anything either. Unmute.
You might be muted. Might be muted.
Don't hear anything.
Hmm. all I hear is my screensaver, which is the Star Trek Next Generation LCAR system. So it's making Enterprise beeps and whistles at me. It's actually pretty cool. It's a cool little screensaver. Cool. It's in the other room.
It's almost like a wave generator, you know, kind of that ambient calming noise for tech geeks.
It is, but it does get on your nerves after a while.
I can imagine.
And it goes in time with the graphics. So whenever it opens a new screen, it does that thing that they would do, and then it's beep, beep, boop, beep.
Okay.
It's actually pretty cool, though. It's free. It's a free...
There should be an alternate screensaver with you just impersonating those noises.
It could be done. I have not the software to do it, but I know there's software where you can make your own screensavers and stuff.
Yes.
It could be done.
Be done.
So I guess we don't have a caller then. Aww.
Yeah, we tried.
She's trying. She's trying.
What number did you call? It's not a 900 one, is it?
No, it's trying to get a hold of Alex Heberling.
Fess hits the wrong number on speed dial. And
Yeah.
Just saying. So, 24-hour webcomics. Ain't it sweet?
Yeah, I already talked about them a lot already.
Okay, well, never mind then. Well, we're not having a show next week. We have to have a show next week.
Why?
Because we have to get that guest on. And
well,
he's not going
to
be there
the
last 2 weeks
25th.
Of October.
I sent an email to him for the 25th, but I haven't heard back from him yet.
Oh, he's going to be moving. He's doing a convention, and then he's in the process of moving. That's why he's not there for, like, close to Halloween.
Oh, okay. Well, then we can do, like, a little show on the 11th.
We can do a little show. That's cool.
A little five-minute show.
Five-minute show.
Something.
We can do
we'll do something. Send me an email to remind me, and I'll re-email him and say, oops, or something. And
unless he can make the 25th, I don't know.
I haven't heard back from him yet.
Okay.
So
I'll shoot him a tweet or something, because I know he's on. So,
Hello!
Hey!
You're on the Webcomic Beacon!
Okay, how's my volume?
Loud.
Very loud.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, there we go.
Hey!
Is that good?
That is better.
Much better.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Hello! Finally! I figured out what was wrong. I had something checked that wasn't supposed to be... Yeah. So, how's it going, guys?
I'm okay. For now.
He's had chili. He's had chili, and I have had none.
Oh, that's very sad. I have chili in my freezer, Mark, if you want to come to Ohio and get some.
I could try sending the rest of the chili to you, Mark, but I don't know how fast FedEx would deliver.
Yeah.
I'll have to make some of my pumpkin gobbler chili.
Oh.
And pumpkin gobbler chili is very good chili. I know, because I make it.
What's in pumpkin gobbler chili, aside from pumpkin?
There's pumpkin, turkey, a whole bunch of spices, corn, black beans. Tomatoes. like tomato sauce type stuff, things like that. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. It's pumpkin gobbler. I don't think it's in my cookbook, though. It might be.
Is it one of those secret family recipes?
No.
He knows.
No, I found a base for a good pumpkin chili and fixed it because it was pretty bland.
Mmm.
Fess is being all furry.
Oh my god, Fess, that cat meow. Face is like the scariest meow. Thing I've seen all day.
Meow. Meow. It could be worse.
Meow. Meow.
That's the furry. What are you doing for 24-hour webcomic day? Comic day.
This year I decided to do a buffer for my comic, since I did four 24-hour comics last year, and that was tough.
I could imagine that. I mean, it's a challenge I don't think I could do, mostly because I have to be at work. But I don't think I could stay up that long. I don't think I could stay up that long and do comics of any quality.
Well, you know, mine are a little.
Well, maybe if you had like a group chat, a conference call going for like the whole 24 hours. You've got other people you can communicate with.
It does help being around other people. Here in Minneapolis, usually the cartoonist collective gets together like several people in one room, and they all do their 24-hour comics together.
See, that's way better.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's a social event as well as, you know, just sitting down and drawing a comic that fast. I did try it once, and I pooped out after about 5 pages just because I ran out of ideas. Mm. My whole last page was talking about writer's block.
That's what the fourth 24-hour comic I did ended up being. It just kind of, because I did it on the side of an art show at my school, and it just ended up being like the crazy things I hallucinated all night while I was in that building.
Yeah. I think that the best thing I came up with for my 24-hour comic was the page numbers. Instead of putting down numbers, I was lining up all the bottles of alcohol I drank as I progressed through the pages of the comic.
That's fantastic.
Oh, I think
some
that was also
of, some of these sound like
Captain
they'd be really fantastic to see if they were collected somewhere. But I think some people do that for charity, don't they? Don't some of the collectives do that for charity?
Yeah, yeah.
Or something.
Do what for charity?
Like collect the 24-hour.
Yeah, they
comics into one
into,
compilation.
Into a box and into a box set that gets sold for $20. Oh. Yeah.
I know for a while they had like official published 24-hour comics by like the people that run the.
Yeah,
the website and stuff every year.
Yeah, Scott McCloud was doing that for a while.
Yeah, that's right.
It was too big. Now some other group of people does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Comics Pro, I think they're called.
Hmm.
Whoever has the 24hourcomicsday.com website, basically.
Probably should take the scrolling text off the YouTube Ustream thing that says we're playing the Gigcast right now, which we're not.
I haven't actually seen it scrolling across there, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. No, in fact, I'm not even doing a comic. Isn't that awful? I'm definitely in support staff mode on 24-hour podcast thing here. Or a comic day, because I'm doing this sort of dabbling in the podcast here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my contribution, I guess. I was saying earlier, my readers will, all 30 of them will need to get by with sort of a fillery thing that I made. And I made earlier this evening. That was the only comicery that I did.
Uh-oh. Fess just yawned.
I've been
and so it begins.
For a while.
You that, have what 11 hours to go?
Yeah.
The dedication is amazing.
I still have 12 hours to go. I didn't start until noon today.
Oh wow.
How many pages you got done?
I'm working on 3 of 6.
You're only that far?
Well, yeah, because I was having a lot of trouble with my live stream earlier, and Photoshop and the live stream Procaster were not playing nicely, so I ended up losing about 2 hours because my computer was running too slow to get anything done. So now I'm just not streaming anymore, which is kind of upsetting.
Excuse me.
Do you think maybe Ustream's getting overloaded?
Quite possibly.
Is that possible?
Well, no, she was on live stream, though.
Oh, I'm sorry, live stream.
Yeah, live stream.
You think they're getting just overwhelmed with webcomickers? Is that possible?
It could be, but I think the problem was more that Photoshop and live stream running at the same time were taking up too much processor power.
Yeah.
And my computer is no spring chicken.
Program?
What's that?
Were you using the Procaster thing where you download it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing's awesome.
I love it normally, but for some reason, ever since it updated the newest version, I've been having problems with it since a few days ago.
What version of Photoshop do you use?
CS4.
See, I use 7.1 still.
I have Photoshop Elements 2.
Holy cats, they're on CS4 now?
Oh yeah, they've been on CS4 for a while.
I'm still on CS2.
Somebody got, I mean, I have a new copy of CS3, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do some upgrades on my computer before I can install it. So I get myself a nice new minty 1 terabyte drive on the way.
Ooh. Someday I'll have a whole terabyte.
All my the disk drives that I do all my art on are the old kind. They're not the SATA kind. They're the one with all the pins in the back.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old school kind, and I've had them quite a while. So I started to worry that maybe I haven't had any problems, but I thought, you know, maybe I just ought to get a big fat old terabyte because I think I had 18% left of a 250 gig drive. Which now that's not very big. When I bought it, it was a pretty good size. But it's all the art files that take up so much space.
Yeah.
Because I'm saving the line art, not the raw scans, but just the black and white finished art. So that's a second copy with even more weight. So between those two, it ate up a hell of a lot of space on that drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel your pain because I've got my external drive with all the comics work on it. I've got two external drives for all my video work.
Wow.
I've got a 2.5 terabyte drive for just.
Wow.
I have
that
so
would
many
awesome.
External drives. It's not funny.
I don't do video. I used to edit analog video, like at a television station.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, 3 1/4 inch tape type stuff.
Yeah, the fun stuff.
Old school stuff.
Yeah.
But I love video. I loved editing. I love doing it, but I don't do it anymore.
There's something very zen about it. I really enjoy it.
It's timing. Yeah. You know, I find that with podcasting, too. So I do a couple of podcasts, and I find it's the timing. It's mm-hmm. like that's where the zen is for me. It's in the timing of where you do the edits to make them sound right.
Yeah, it's like music. It's got a beat to it.
It's got a beat, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same thing. I'd love to do more video. I've got this camera just sitting over there on the shelf. I don't do anything with it.
Well, there you go. Just start.
Well, I'm in not New England. There's nothing to take pictures of.
You're in New England.
Not New England.
Not New England.
I'm in not in, New England, yeah, which is the antithesis of New England,
okay.
Because it sucks. So it's not a good place to be. Because if I was in New England, I have all kinds of things to take pictures of, but I'm in not New England. Which is why this is the LaGrange point, remember. There's like no culture.
That's right.
There's
ashes.
There's
burning.
No interesting things to do. The topography is ugly. Nah. The buildings are ugly. But anyway, I don't know. If I were to actually try to take up the challenge of doing the 24-hour comic, I know what would happen. I would start out very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a page or two would look great. And then it would slowly start to degrade, and the quality would get worse and worse and worse and worse until I just said, ah, screw it. And you wound up with a stick figure
mm-hmm.
at the end. It would devolve.
Yeah, I definitely witnessed that in just the 5 pages I got done last time I tried it. Yeah, there's a reason why I'm not a writer.
Well, I wouldn't be the writing. I don't think I'd have trouble coming up with ideas necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the actual drawing would just get crappier and crappier.
Yeah, no, I know what you're getting at.
And then there would be pizza I would have to eat. And,
yeah.
And then I would be sleepy. And
they go, I should do laundry. Yeah.
I don't know. I think probably the best way to do it would be a story. I mean, you can do random sketches of stuff throughout the day. I can see that working too.
Yeah.
But if you have a story, then at least you know what's going to happen next. So
right. You know, after my sad attempt at 24-hour comics day, somebody came up to me and went, "Why didn't you just do a comics version of your Gibraltar story, which is a true story of something that my weekend in Gibraltar." And it's like, oh man, that, you know, the story is right there. And I probably would have done a lot better with, you know, just having something that I already had in mind rather than just trying to make the story up as I went along, as well as the artwork.
I admire people that can do it.
Yeah, it's amazing when you see it done. And my brain doesn't work that way, apparently.
Then I admire people who can actually draw comics. And not just sort of scribbly ones like mine. But I admire like, you know, Diana Nock.
You don't give yourself enough credit, Mark.
Box Brown. I mean,
they are excellent squiggly lines.
Yeah, I agree. They're fun squigglies.
Yeah, they're not god-awful squiggly lines.
I've seen far worse, certainly.
Schultz was doing squiggly lines towards the end.
Well, that's because the poor guy was, like, you know, at death's door.
And he insisted on still drawing every strip himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I could see that coming for a long time. That was sad, but you'd look at a Peanuts, and you could see how his hand was shaking trying to make those lines. It was kind of sad, and I was like, yeah, he can't do that much longer. And sure enough, it wasn't too much longer that he had to give it up. And wow. But 50-plus odd years, over 50 years of that.
Yep.
Damn. And he never considered himself a very good draftsman. In other words, very good at drawing. But...
I was going to say, he really couldn't find any recruits for the Army.
No. He never really thought of himself as someone who drew very well or designed the strips very well. I mean, he did. Of course he did. But he thought, you know, there's people better at this and this and this than I am.
Well, you know, there's the confusion between rendering and design. And Charles Schultz really knew how to design.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a good simplicity there. That's how I learned how to draw grass, was from Charlie Brown. Because if you look at when I was really little and just starting to draw, I, you know, of course, like all little kids, we like Snoopy,
yeah,
you know, and the cartoons, right? And back then,
back in my day, we didn't have no DVD, none of this fancy stuff. If you missed your show, it was too damn bad. You went to bed and cried over it.
But that's true. We didn't have no videotape. I had some of the books and some things, and that's how, you know, I would learn how to draw grass, was the way Schultz would draw grass with these little hash marks.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, eyes. You can see both of those in my comics, like the way I do the eyes and the, like, parentheses around the eyes when they're surprised.
Right.
And things like that. But the other thing I picked up on from Schultz was shadows.
Yeah.
Because I remember in a very, very childish way, because I didn't really know what I was doing, but sort of looking at a picture of Snoopy, and I'm like, what's that line underneath him? And then it dawned on me it was the shadow he was casting.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very important thing, because if you don't have stuff like that, then your character is just sort of floating there. So it's a very important design element, and of course I didn't realize that, but that's how I picked up, oh yeah, that sort of hashy line under there is a shadow, so I'll put that in there. That's the ground or whatever.
Oh, and God, the cat's back.
The cat.
Sorry.
And I still sign my artwork like Schultz, just like I did when I was like four, with the sort of smooshed S and then the scribbly letters after it. Although mine doesn't look as neat and pretty, but
Mark, you got a comment in the chat room. Autumn Lake rocks. It's Peanuts meets King of the Hill.
Which is very true.
Sherm would be Hank.
I'm selling grouchy propane.
God damn it, Dale.
Yeah, that was really
God
good.
God damn it, Mark. I'm trying to be grouchy. I'm selling propane.
But it's interesting to bring up Charles Schulz, just because there are so many webcomics artists that have been very heavily influenced by Schulz. I work very often with John Kovalik of Dork Tower, and by God, he's all about Charles Schulz.
And very, rightfully so.
Why is there's a cat on my face?
You know, I've often wished I... Well, never mind. I think... Well, I've noticed people still mention Schulz, but now I start to hear Bill Watterson more and more and more.
Yeah.
Like he's like the next generation... I don't so much hear Doonesbury anymore.
Interesting. And I think
that's still a very well-drawn strip.
It is.
And I would think for all the hell that it gets, I think Blondie is probably still one of the best-drawn strips on the funny page, if we talk about newspapers.
Yeah.
It's still very, very well-drawn and very, very well laid out and everything, but it's not nearly as cool as it used to be.
And I think too few people look at Bloom County / Outland / the Burke Breathed strips.
Yeah, that...
Really,
I mean,
really loved Bloom County.
That was so surreal at times, too,
yeah.
Especially Opus.
But it was, it could go anywhere from political to silly to... And the artwork was just beautiful.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal strip.
Yeah.
And I wish I heard more people mention that one.
Yeah, me too.
But I do hear people mention it, I guess, if they talk about their influences and stuff from newspapers.
I feel like I've heard Bloom County a lot, actually, in people's influences. Like, Bloom County and Get Fuzzy are often mentioned in the same breath in those instances when I've heard them.
I don't hear anybody talking about people like Kathy Guthweisen Dyson or whatever the hell.
Guys White.
Because she's god-awful. God, I hate that comic. I think another one that kind of gets short shrift is, or better or for worse, which is...
Well-drawn.
Very well-drawn. Some of the storylines are kind of naff, but the artwork has always been very good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one I think is probably kind of underappreciated. I'm trying to think of like newspaper comics, but things like Beetle Bailey and comics like that, I don't think they really inspire anybody anymore.
Not really anymore.
Family Circus.
God, that only inspired people to kill it. I don't know why it was still in
things
the paper.
Things like Wizard of Id and stuff like that, where they're kind of scribbly. I was never drawn to things like that.
Yeah, Hagar the Horrible. Yeah. Do you remember Shu?
Read them.
I remember Shu.
Now, that was another well-drawn strip.
Yeah, and that had that political cartoon vibe. It's like that... there's something to that political cartoonist style that Shu had that not many other newspaper strips had. And I wonder why that is, why there's that sort of style that kind of gets stuck in editorial cartoons and not necessarily comic strips.
I don't know. Watterson trained as an editorial cartoonist.
True.
He did a lot of that, actually, before he got famous. I think you could maybe kind of see it.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of see hints of it, but it's hard to see. But you're right. I think that's the only one I can think of that really has that editorial cartoonist style.
Yeah.
I think he did do edit. I think McNally did do editorial cartoons, but I don't quite remember anymore. That was a really good comic, and then now it's just another recycle. It's another zombie strip.
Yeah.
Which is so sad. They just should have let that one go.
Yeah, they should have.
You know, that is a fantastic strip. I can't really think of too many others that... I mean, Dilbert is very funny, or was very funny at one time, but art-wise, it's stagnant. Just so minimal.
Yeah.
Garfield the same way. It's just minimal. In fact, it's all cut and paste now.
Yeah,
it's cut and paste.
And then there's Red Meat, which is just which that's the point. It's just cut and paste.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so hard to think of commercial strips that they used to be so incredibly well drawn, and now they're so limited. They're like limited animation. They really are. They're like cheap limited animation.
Yeah.
When you compare that to something like a Tom and Jerry short from the 1940s, I mean, they're so obviously bad.
Well, when you look at, and it's so interesting that you're seeing that on all fronts. You know, you see that in comic books too. I mean, you get the old classic comic books, and you know, you're talking about people like Neil Adams and Jim Aparo and. You know, fantastic artists, and today it's kind of this really big ocean of there's still some really good artists working today, of course, but it's certainly a different style. And I mean, the fact that Rob Liefeld has any sort of career at all is just frickin' amazing to me.
I'll tell you who I always loved, and I can still pick his art out.
Yeah?
Is Kurt Swan.
Kurt Swan is amazing.
That guy was so underappreciated at the end when these new styles started to come in, like McFarlane and things like that, Venom and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Venom, Spawn. When his style started to creep in there, Kurt Swan, and with Dave Hunt on inks... I mean, it sounds almost like a band, doesn't it? But Kurt Swan on pencils and Dave Hunt on ink, it just jumps right out at you.
Yeah.
That's the team that drew that. And it's so crisp and it's so clean and so well designed. And I really have always liked that. I can pick out some of the Superman artists like Wayne Boring and Kurt Scheffenberger, I think, is another one. Probably mispronouncing that, but at one point I could pick them out very easily. But Kurt Swan and Dave Hunt as a team were just perfection.
Yeah.
Amazing. But not appreciated today, because now everything is this dynamic style, which is a totally different kettle of fish.
Yes.
Yeah.
Swan's a Minneapolis boy, actually.
Was he?
Yeah. What's really interesting, his childhood home. That block has been home to at least two other comics artists I know.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Right now, Terry Beatty lives on that same block. Terry Beatty, the inker who, I don't know what he's currently doing, but he was inking the children's Batman books for like 10 years. he inked all of Batman Strikes. He inked pretty much all of Bruce Timm animated Batman stuff that DC was putting out for a while. Mm. Also Christopher Jones, who I've worked with on Dr. Blank, Superhero Shrink, and various other things, and Convergence and whatnot. He lived on that block for about 5 years. So,
wow.
And
isn't that something?
Another Batman artist, oddly enough.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, George Perez, of course.
Perez is amazing.
Absolutely. And still fantastic, although I think he has some health issues that have kept him from working. I don't know if
yeah,
it's...
Yeah, he injured his wrist working on one of his famous collage sort of covers.
Yeah, I think it was like a carpal tunnel type thing or something, something like that. And I always liked him. I have the Star Treks that he did when DC put out Star Trek.
Yeah, he's one of the few people that actually did Star Trek well.
Yeah.
The Star Trek books are so weird because, they always look stiff even when you put really good artists on them, and that's because the actors have approval over their appearance.
Yeah.
So that's why it always looks like somebody is tracing photographs and...
Tracing a photograph?
Yeah.
That was a long time ago. That was back with real Star Trek with like William Shatner.
Yeah.
Movie Star Trek, I guess. It was back when the movies came out. He did like the first couple issues, I think. And then they handed it off to another guy who I've never heard of since. He had a long run with it. Tom Sutton, I think his name was.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he's up to now, or if anything. Or Paris Cullens is another one who did Blue Devil when that first came out. I never saw what he got up to after that. Maybe he went home. But those, they had some really, really good artists. And now I've picked up comic books like in the last year, like Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah.
And one of the incarnations of it.
Yeah.
Great art. Okay, we're going to cancel the book now and relaunch it again.
Yeah, there is some really good new comics art out there. It's just
Newspaper comics? It's hard to get into, and then once you're in, it's like deadline, 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 deadline.
Pretty much.
Hmm.
Yeah, you just got to crank it out. And I think part of the issue is also that the comics industry is really struggling to keep its head above water. So the editors are always looking for the next new thing.
Yeah.
So they're just they're going through a lot of artists trying to find the next lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, the next
rather than sticking
next
with their
McFarlane
guys that are
kind of
tried
next.
And true. I know Joe Staton, who I think is just phenomenal artist. He did a bunch of the Justice League stuff back in the early 80s, and beautiful, beautiful artwork. He's been kind of relegated to Scooby-Doo for 5 years now, and that's what he's been doing for DC. Luckily, about a year and a half ago, Archie picked him up, and he's been doing Archie comics as well. And that's been doing well for him, but it's just sad to me that somebody as talented as Joe is still trying to find work, and he's been doing this for 40 years.
Really?
Yeah.
He's too expensive.
No, he's not he's not particularly expensive either.
Maybe you should try webcomics.
But the artwork he did on Femme Noir, which I worked on for the first issue, that's some of the best comics art I've ever seen. It's just beautiful.
Do you think it's like, because you're closer to that than I am, but do you think they're kind of like GM? They just have too many damn cars? They have too many different brands of car? Something like a DC?
Yeah, they're trying to pay too many, they're trying to...
too many titles?
They're too many titles and too many artists that they've got to schedule and things like that. Is that what you're kind of thinking?
Yeah, is that one of the things they're struggling with? They have to put out all these different titles. I know they have to keep. I read somewhere they have to keep Wonder Woman in print to retain the rights.
Yes, well, actually, that's no longer the case. But that's only not been the case for about 3 years now.
Oh, okay, that's new then.
Yeah, that's new. They finally cleared up the rights on that. But,
yeah. But when I hear something
those
like
that are actually listening and wondering what we're talking about, the creator of Wonder Woman, who was also the inventor of the polygraph machine, when he he handed over Wonder Woman to DC Comics. Part of the stipulation of DC owning the license was that it would be Wonder Woman would be kept in continuous print. Otherwise, the rights would revert back to this guy's estate. So, since the 1940s, Wonder Woman has been continuously printed with no breaks because DC could not, let it lapse. Which is a fascinating thing. But yeah, the rights have been cleared up now, so DC just owns Wonder Woman outright.
Wow. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, whenever I hear that they're struggling, GM would have the Caprice, and then they'd have the Impala, which was a copy of the Caprice.
Yeah.
It just had a different sticker on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like they had all these different product lines until recently when they had to cut a whole bunch of them. And I wonder if maybe that's part of their problem. Is it just losing readership?
Well, they're losing readership for a lot of other reasons than that. The big problem with the comics industry, at least for the 22-page comic, is that it's not
God,
the grocery store.
I remember one was 32 pages.
Yeah, or 32 pages or whatever the heck. There, some of the kids' comics are down to 20 pages now.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people in the industry call them the pamphlets now just because that's kind of what they are. But, first of all, you're spending $3-4 on a pamphlet. Back when this industry started, you can buy one for a quarter. And yeah, I know there's inflation and all that stuff, but even back then, a quarter was a much, much smaller investment than $4 for 22 pages of comic. But they're also not in the grocery stores and the drug stores, so kids aren't going by, "Hey, mom, buy me that." All the comics now are sold in by direct sale, which means they're just in comic book shops. So if people aren't already going to comic book shops and bringing their kids into comic book shops, kids don't see them, kids don't buy them. And, the kids, you hook them early and, then they continue buy comic books. But now, the reason that the stereotype is that it's 35-year-old males buying these comics is because they haven't been in the grocery stores or in within easy grasp of kids for a couple decades now.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that. It's true. Mm-hmm. I see some occasionally, like in the supermarket.
Every once in a while, and that's because Archie still sells their comics in grocery stores and drugstores time to time, but the other big publishers do not, because they have to pay for that space.
Yeah.
They have to pay for shelf space at a drugstore or a grocery chain. Whereas in a comic book shop, you don't actually have to pay for the shelf space. It's on a different sales model.
Okay, well that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And speaking of web comics,
well, it's all comic.
Well, we actually got on a at least related subject.
Yeah, but this is the web comic beacon, and I tried not to.
Come on.
Well, we did embellish on the Doctor Who episode, which is almost not about web comics at all. But
we were talking about Space 1999 earlier. Come on.
I Fast. Know, and Fast. We. Fast. I'm not looking Space. Forward to editing this show. We've been all talking for about 2 hours now, and Space I don't. Or I think no, maybe it's just 1 hour. Who the hell knows anymore? But I got to get back to the schedule, and I'm already behind. But Mark, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Oh, okay.
Mark?
I'm a guest.
Mark is moping.
I know. I got to run these reruns so I could, take a nap or something.
Oh, okay. So you're going to be back on when here?
Alex, thanks very much for calling in.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah,
hi,
yeah.
Alex.
Thanks for tolerating
Hi,
us, Alex.
Hi, Mark. I'm still
thought
here.
You left. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, I just have no experience with print comics. I didn't read them growing up, so I really had nothing to add.
I'm really sorry.
It's okay. It was interesting.
That's okay. And, of course, Melissa of Tin Lizard Productions, thanks very much for, you know, bringing me chili and soda pop and...
No problem.
And coming on the show and extending this whole... Delaying my everything for an hour and 18 minutes.
I didn't get any chili.
When I'm in your area of the country, I'll bring you chili.
Okay.
Aww.
Alex, I will bring you chili too.
Awesome. We can trade chili. I'll bring the stuff that's in my freezer.
Ooh.
And I'll make some pumpkin gobbler.
Okay, I am running out of I'm running out of space on the tape here, and I need to run it out, flip it over to rerun.
Tape?
Yeah, right here, the tape that's recording. It only has like a minute left.
That's not tape.
It's tape.
It is not tape.
Get out of my studio.
All right, I'll duck out here then.
All right, thanks for coming, Alex. See you later. Bye. That's Alex Heberling.
Of Garanos.com.
Of Garanos.com. Thank you.
Garanos.
Yep.
Bye, guys.
And Mark, thanks very much for coming on the show again. I will hit you up later, okay?
Okie dokie.
All right, see you later. That's Mark of AutumnLake.com.
That's me.
All right, bye-bye. Again, there was more stuff that was done by the guy that we've gotten all the music for the webcomic Beacon. I just changed the end just a little bit because it was technically an incompleted work. That'll really is pretty much it that I have recorded. I did conk out about 19 hours into the 24-hour broadcast attempt. And, that kind of sucked, but I really needed to plan it better. And I was hoping for more, live, feeds to follow and more people to call in and say about their status. But I'm guessing that maybe I just started way too late, but it was as early as I could get on. But in any case, so what you get are two basically episodes worth of content to listen to if you missed our 24-hour broadcast attempt. And just to remind you, our advertisers for the 24-hour broadcast event was PH Factor, Demon Eater, Webcomic Planet Collective, Failed Objective, Jaden and Crusader, and of course PH Factor, as in they were advertising the entire time. So kudos on them, and thanks to all of our advertisers for the show. Remember, we broadcast live on practically every Sunday at about 3 p.m. Eastern. And also, we also mentioned who's advertising on our show during that time on our Project Wonderful ad. So it's the best time to get in and get a little plug as well. You can, if you have any questions, comments, whatnot for us at the Webcomic Beacon, you can email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter as Webcomic Beacon. And, of course, you can check out the new... Well, kind of. It's been stagnant for a while and finally updated. Webcomic Bacon! It is a communal open source webcomic project that we were hoping to put together. The first strip is currently up. I'm getting some of the original character creators to try and get some of their own original strips up. Basically, the main cast is open source characters. Anyone and everyone can make their own guest strip if they want, as long as they play by the rules that we have set. Of course, since they're open source, you can also take them and use them in your own way in your own comics, of course. But we're only going to be putting guest strips up that match the few rules that we have. So you can get in on that if you'd like. Also, the Webcomic Beacon is planning to do what is it called? It's a compilation book of holiday cooking. If you got a recipe that you want to tell in comic form, or some cooking funny jokes that you want to tell in a page or a couple of pages, or just one strip or a few strips, let us know in our forum. We're hoping to get a lot of people that wouldn't normally be able to print something or put something together or put enough together to print something into a compilation book. We're trying to do a print on demand thing, and contributors will be able to buy a copy at the base price, or buy any number of copies at the base price that they'd like to sell on their own or whatever. So just check our forum for that information. Again, this has been a long night. This is Fess of Fessworks.com, and of course the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com. Tune in on October 18th as we have Jenny from The Zombie Hunters, an awesome zombie comic, and be sure to be there on the 18th to catch that. We'll see you later.
That's all for the Beacon. Be sure to tune in next week.